Moncrief on News Talk.
Anyway, time to look beyond our borders and bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan DeBurca Butler is with us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
First story now, the United States we're going to go to first, and this is about the killing of a 15-year-old.
Yeah, specifically in California. And this happened in an area of California called San Bernardino. The San Bernardino Police Department were looking after this, or the Sheriff's Department were supposed to be looking after this. It's a very complicated story. In that last Saturday week, 911 got a call, and a relative of this 15-year-old reported that the 15-year-old Ryan Gaynor is his name, was having a mental health episode, right? Mm. So he has autism or had autism. And they said that he was breaking up things in the house and that he had attacked his sister. So they called 911. Now, they had done this previously. They had on 5 occasions, in fact, called 911. And every time the police came and they managed the situation and things passed away peacefully. But on this particular occasion, for whatever reason, when they arrived, it seems that everything happened very, very quickly. The first the body cam footage, which was just released, shows that a first deputy arrives. He goes to a door, finds a door open. And all of a sudden, he hears a voice saying he's carrying a stick. Someone is running towards him. He pulls his gun and says, "You're going to be shot." The person running at him doesn't stop. And the next thing, he's shot. So within 7 seconds of arriving at the front door, this poor 15-year-old is shot. He subsequently died in hospital. So 3 bullets were fired into him. One was by a second deputy who arrived slightly afterwards, but who caught the actual shooting on his body cam footage, if that makes sense. Because the first deputy that arrived had actually turned his back, so we don't see him shooting the 15-year-old individual.
And given that they'd responded to similar calls before, what did they do on all those previous occasions?
Well, you see, this is part of the many questions that are being asked, right? So we're not sure at this point if the 2 deputies who haven't been named had responded to this particular house before, or if they had been given the information that this 15-year-old boy has a history of mental health issues and that people from their department had been along to help with those issues. So we don't know whether they were told if he was 15 years of age either. We don't know if they were told to respond in a non-aggressive manner. Mm. They were just told that it was an assault and battery situation that they were dealing with. And they hear he's got a stick, he's running out.
Yeah, yeah.
And the officer responds in the way that he's been trained to respond. Now, this is what's coming from the head of the Sheriff's Department, saying, "Look, we're not there to take a whack in the head, and this is how we're trained."
Do they have tasers?
No. If they didn't use them. And that was one of the things actually that can be heard on the body cam footage. There's at least 1 or 2 women, I presume the sister and the mother or somebody else who was in the house, who come out afterwards and basically say, "Why did you shoot him?" Now they're screaming at the top of their voices, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
"Why didn't you shoot him? Where are your tasers? Why didn't you tase him?" So there's a lot of questions still at this point, but unfortunately you're talking about a 15-year-old black kid. I don't think we mentioned that, by the way. I'm sure a lot of people probably guessed already.
Yeah, and there will be an aspect to that, of course, as well. God. Right, South Korea, where we're going to go to next, where doctors are on strike, but not for much longer because they won't be doctors.
Well, that's true. That's one way of looking at it, I suppose, yeah. It's a story that I've been watching for the last few weeks because it did start last month. It's been going for over a month at this stage, and mainly junior doctors who walked out last month, 12,000 of them altogether from 100 teaching hospitals. And they did this because of proposals that were put forward by the relatively new government there of Yoon Suk-yeol. And he has decided that he's going to address the significant problems that they have with staff shortages in the health sector there by drafting in 2,000 junior doctors per annum, an extra 2,000 junior doctors per annum from 2025 on. So Every year at the moment, they have 3,053, okay?
Okay.
A very specific number. But they feel that there's a shortage of doctors in places like paediatrics and various other fields, and also out in the countryside. And so they need to deal with it by bringing in more people.
Okay.
And it seems to make sense.
Yeah.
But the junior doctors aren't happy about this because they basically feel that this new cohort that's going to be brought in isn't necessarily targeting the areas where there's shortfalls. So it's basically bringing these doctors, and then there's a free-for-all. These doctors can specialise in whatever areas they want, and that will lead to more competition for these doctors in the areas that they want to practice in, if that makes sense.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.
Because they have a sort of a funny system there. It's mainly, they have public healthcare insurance, but they run hospitals privately. So essentially, doctors are their own businesses, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay. So there's an incentive to do particular sorts of medicine.
Bang on.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. And so they're not happy about this. So they went out on strike. And now the government are saying, well, okay, a few weeks ago, we offered you a deal on pay and on conditions. And we said we'd look at the 36-hour rotas that these guys do. Seems to be across the world, and junior doctors do
God.
This. But
this
that
is
was,
now, that's a continuous 36-hour shift.
Apparently,
yeah,
so now you get a bit of
Crikey.
Kip in between, I imagine. Like similar to how they do here, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you're on call for 36 hours. The doctors didn't accept that. The government said, okay, well, we're going to start suspending your licenses now, right? So they issued warnings last week saying they were going to do this for 3 months. And then just today, two senior members of the Korean Medical Association who are leading this strike lost their licenses, or at least they were told, given notification, that they would lose their licenses for three months from the 15th of April. So it seems that these threats are now, they're following through
right,
on these threats.
Okay. But that will leave them with even fewer doctors.
It will.
Yeah.
Yes. But they seem to have support from most of the general population.
Ah.
So the general population are basically saying, there was a poll that was published last week, 84% of respondents supported the hiring of more doctors. Maybe they didn't ask them about the nuances of how those doctors were being hired and the like. So it's a complex situation, but not one that seems to be that's going to come to a resolution anytime soon.
Right, the Philippines. Excuse me. The Philippines we're going to go to next. Now, this was a scam, was it, where people were pretending to be in love with people, or how did this scam work?
Yeah, so these are Southeast Asia, right? Places like Cambodia, Myanmar and the Philippines, which is the subject of this particular story, seems to be a bit of a hotbed for scam centres.
Yeah, okay.
And what happens is, in this particular situation, right, we know that there was a scam centre just north of Manila where over 600 people were rescued last week, okay, by police. Now, these people, or this raid was carried out from a tip-off. Okay, there was the tip-off was given by a Vietnamese man in his 30s who had arrived in the Philippines in January of this year.
Mm.
He soon realised that the chef job that he had been promised before he arrived to the Philippines wasn't the job he was getting. And he was sitting in a call centre basically trying to scam people in Vietnam into believing that he was, you know, some sort of lover that they'd always wanted. And ultimately, he was trying to get them to give him money, okay,
yeah,
or invest in projects that were completely and utterly bogus, right? Anyway, he managed to escape at the end of February, very dramatically climbed over a wall, crossed the river, ended up taking refuge in a farm, and the farm owner reported the whole thing to police, who then went and raided this particular centre. And as I said, 600 people have been rescued from it. So essentially what happens is these people are trafficked, and they end up going into these places and through the internet, I don't know if they use phones or anything like that, but through the internet, they scam people out of money. And some of them are called love scams. Some of them are through crypto or whatever it might be, various different things. Not the first time this has happened. There was an incident in May of last year in the Philippines as well, where over 1,000 people were freed by police. Again, these people were all caught up in this scam center. Yeah, so there's lots of it going on.
And how do they, I mean, obviously they're keeping them physically captive, but there must be something that they do to get these people to cooperate and take part in these scams.
Point guns at them,
okay.
Which is what they do. So it's a great question. But basically, in this particular instance, the police, when they went in, they found 6 guns and 42 rounds of live ammunition. Obviously, this guy had to escape from climbing over a wall and crossing over a river. And this particular instance, the centre was masquerading as an online gambling firm. So I don't know how they get away with it for so long, but apparently they did. And but luckily for these 600 people, they've been caught in the end.
Right, Zanzibar, we're going to go to next, where several people are dead after eating turtle.
After eating turtle meat. Yeah, this is a delicacy, apparently, in Zanzibar and I suppose wider parts of Tanzania as well. So this happened in a place called Pemba Island, which is the northern main island. Does that make sense? Anyway, big island on the north part of Zanzibar. It's about the size of County Dublin and has about 500,000 people living in it. Okay, and it's everything that you could wish for. Sandy beaches, all that kind of thing. But unfortunately, in this instance, 8 children and an adult have died due to the fact that they ate this turtle meat. And it's a particular type of poisoning that they get called chelonitoxism. Okay, it comes from the Greek for turtle, which is chelonia. There's my Boris Johnson bit.
Wow.
It's very bad if it happens to you. And these 9 people have died. 78 others have been taken to hospital. And I suspect that if we revisit this story maybe later in the week, or if I have a look at it later in the week, more will have died because there's no antidote to it. And it's extremely poisonous. It's rare. But when it does happen, it can be catastrophic.
And was there any evidence that this particular, that this turtle meat wasn't cooked properly or anything of that nature?
In general, what seems to happen in this particular instance is that if you don't parboil it for long enough, whatever stuff is left on the meat, the poison that's left on the meat doesn't come off it and it can kill you, as it has in this case. But as I said, it's very, very rare, but it might be an idea to stay away from turtle.
Yeah, right. Nigeria, we're going to go to finally, and as we were saying during the week, it is Ramadan. Are they enforcing it on people that you're supposed to fast during Ramadan? It's like a criminal offence if you don't.
Well, there's 12 states in Nigeria that have had Sharia law for over 20 years, thereabouts, right? It's contentious throughout the country. But anyway, during Ramadan, they have Islamic police there that are known as Hizba. And they go around basically carrying out searches of eateries and markets and various different places, finding people who are eating food that they're not supposed to be eating because they're supposed to be fasting.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, yes, they do really enforce it. Now, it's relatively tame, it has to be said. So the people that they announced as being arrested. So there was 11 in total, 10 men and 1 woman, right? The woman was arrested because she was selling food at a market and obviously she was seen having a bit of a nibble when she wasn't supposed to be. But they were all arrested and then they were set free. They swore an oath to basically say, oh, we won't do it again.
Okay.
And I think the opportunity to announce the fact that these people were arrested was taken by the authorities to say, look, we will arrest you. Just make sure that you're fasting and that we don't catch you.
And are there many, are any non-Muslims living in these states?
There would be quite a few. I mean, the majority of them would be Muslims, but there are quite a number of Christians and other religions living in this particular part of the world. But they wouldn't be affected by that unless, of course, they end up cooking food for a Muslim and the Muslim eats it during fasting or they provide them with food.
Yeah.
So that would be the only instance. But as was said in the statement, it doesn't involve people who are non-Muslim, so they won't be getting in trouble if they're found eating. Yeah,
yeah, still an odd one. Right, so what should we look out for the rest of this week, Jonathan?
Yeah, tomorrow the World Happiness Report is coming out. Yeah, absolutely. We always do relatively well in that.
I think so.
I think grand is taken in a positive way when they do the reports. Thursday is World Parent Day.
No, God, that's the opposite then, really, yeah. They should combine the two.
They should. It gets a day off. And then Senegal holds presidential elections on Sunday, March 24th. These were the elections we were talking about only 2 or 3 weeks ago, which were supposed to be happening later in the year. It seems that Macky Sall, who people thought was going to go for a third term, has backed down.
Right, yes.
One of his main opposition people who was in jail has been let out. So things are developing in a more democratic fashion, which is good.
Which we'd hoped, because Senegal had up until then been stable of democracy.
Exactly. So we wanted to stay that way. So there's 3 things to look out for.
Okay, good stuff. Jonathan, thanks a million. As ever, Jonathan De Burka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.